Welcome back to another episode of Frog Fever, a Big 12 basketball podcast brought to you by KillerFrogs.com. My name is Davis Wilson. With me, as always, is my co-host, Nick Germani. And we've got a sad pod today. Sad to report that TCU is no longer a tournament team. But there are a few Big 12 teams that still are, so we're going to talk about them first, and then we'll kind of get into the TCU side of things. But Nick, what are your impressions on the first weekend, first two rounds of March Madness? How was it for you?
Yeah, March is always, you know, it's the best. It really is. There are some awesome moments going on, and you know, like Oakland, Kentucky, Golkey took over the world. There was crazy games, like we'll get into like Houston A&M or like, I don't know, Creighton, Oregon, crazy. Eddie was in a couple of crazy games at Rado. So there are some games of the other season, and it was a lot of chalk, I would say. But all chalk does is just align for a better Sweet 16 matchups and better games down the line. So I'm excited for what March has in store later on, and I thought the first weekend was fun overall.
Yeah, I did too. I thought it was really fun. As always, it's just nonstop basketball for four straight days. I'm not sure what else we could really ask for, but we had some first round exits for the Big 12 group. TCU obviously one of those, but we're gonna get into the other. What were there? Two other first round exits. BYU and Texas Tech. What do you want to get into first?
We can do, I was thinking maybe like chronological order, because that BYU game was, I think, the second overall game. Yeah, and we'll obviously get into TCU later on, so don't think that we're ducking them or anything.
Yeah,
but we'll talk about BYU, first real big upset of the tournament, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Duquesne was a team that a lot of people thought were, I think, overseeded, but they proved everyone wrong. Like, BYU was probably underseeded because they were supposed to be a 5 seed. And it just, what BYU was dependent on all year, which was their lethal offense, just didn't show up, and their 3-point shooting just didn't show up.
Yeah.
Is kind of the point that I took away from it. And when you have your bread and butter get taken away, as you know, we've seen with TCU so many times, and when you're relying on one thing, then that can happen. No one really showed up outside of Jackson Robinson, and he kind of started to take over that game later on to bring it back in it. But I mean, he had 5 of their 8 total threes, and when that happens, it just can't you can't be successful as a BYU team. But I want to say overall for BYU, I mean, amazing first year. Like, I think when you have tournament losses happen so fast, it can kind of be the thing that you take away from the season and leaves a bad taste in your mouth. But they were unbelievable, and they still have a ton of young players that will probably return for them next year. So they have – yeah, an outstanding first year, and they have nothing but good things to look ahead to.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a fun game. Duquesne was kind of leading, it felt like, for most of it. I thought that BYU had a chance. I ended up picking Duquesne in my bracket, but I was kind of rooting for BYU just for the sake of this pod. And, you know, they were down, and it felt pretty hopeless. Jackson Robinson kind of starts to take over the game in the second half, and you start to think, like, you know, maybe they're going to come back, they're going to avoid the upset, but Duquesne holds them off. And yeah, like you said, this is an offensive team. They don't play great defense, and their offense really wasn't there for the most part outside of Jackson Robinson. So I agree with you, though. Really great season for Mark Pope, and you know, their first year in the Big 12, I think they handled it really well. So,
yeah.
An unfortunate loss, but I think that they've got a lot to be excited about. And, it happens.
Yeah, no, for sure. And the other 6-11 matchup that took a loss was the only, outside of TCU, the only two other first-round losses for the Big 12 was Tech and NC State. Mm-hmm. When DJ Burns continues to take over the country,
America's player.
He had another great game against Tech. He was 7-11 from the field, putting up 16, and then they had Middlebrooks off the bench going crazy for 21. But Tech was, looking back on it, Tech was always a team that I was never crazy thought was going to be a real threat going on. Like, I never really bought into them being at the top. They kind of started off at the top of the conference, and they were, you know, kind of that fraudish team that just stuck around at the top, and they deserve the sixth seed. But I don't think they were ever going to be a real difference maker in terms of making a Final Four and Elite Eight or even a Sweet 16. They just didn't have that crazy talent of the year. But what McCaslin's done at Tech is great again, as you said. Like, I love – he's one of the best young coaches, I think, in all of college basketball. So what they had specifically this game was, like, Pop was just cold. Like, he was 1 of 10 from 3. Toussaint was cold, 1 of 7 from 3. Like, their guys didn't show up, and their lack of depth, I think, got them too, because they only ran 7 deep, and – they couldn't really turn to a lot of different people to get them out of the hole. So, Tech, I don't think it's a crazy upset, probably even as much as BYU Duquesne. But, yeah, that NC State wagon just rolled on, and they're a real threat, as obviously the only double-digit seed in the Sweet 16.
Yeah. Yeah, they were, I think, 4.5-point favorites, and I felt really weird about – I did pick them, but I felt weird about doing it because I just don't – I don't really know what to expect from Texas Tech on a nightly basis. Like, it's sometimes they are really well put together in team that just works. It just works, I guess. And and other times it's just rough and they don't get a lot. Defensively, they just weren't like Warren Washington. I don't think had a great game. I mean, it's tough to guard a guy like DJ Burns, who's just a massive human, but it was more like this kind of across the board production from North Carolina State that really Texas Tech just couldn't handle. Like Mo Diarra for North Carolina State, former Mizzou Tiger, for whatever reason. No longer on Missouri. he goes for 17 and 12, and no one can really stop him or DJ. It's just or either DJs. Like, it's just, I don't know. They were inconsistent a lot this year. They had some really great wins. And like you said, McCaslin's done a great job. I'm really excited to see kind of the direction that they go. I'm sure they're going to keep improving as a program. But it was certainly just this one never really felt that close to me. Just kind of it wasn't a great turnout for Texas Tech, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, all right. And then going on to the teams that, you know, won a game, second round exits. So the team I kind of want to just get started on is UT. Because UT was one of the more interesting teams in all of the Big 12 this season. We talked about them a lot of being mega talented and kind of primed to make a run, but either for some reason it just didn't click. Maybe it was injuries throughout the year that they were inconsistent. But I kind of bought back into them later on in the year. And that first game, Colorado State just went cold. People say they caught Virginia from that first four game when they only had 11 points at half, and they kind of made it a little bit better. But, I mean, overall, Texas kind of handled them for the majority of that game, I would say. Weaver actually played well at the bench. Kendall, he kind of had a little moment because he's got that funny look to him. But, that first game, but the second game against Tennessee, that was a battle of talented teams. I was really looking forward to that game, and that game was great. I mean, it came down to the end. Dalton Connect just couldn't hit a three for that first, you know, it seemed like he started off mega. He had 18 at the end, hit the clutch free throws, but, you know, UT was into the whole game. You know, Weaver hit a couple of shots. Tyrese Hunter was going down late. And obviously, you know, being a seven seed and you're expected to be the second round exit, so I guess they kind of met expectations. But if they would have, you know, a couple of bounces of the ball go a different way, maybe miss free throws, they beat Tennessee. They would have been a scary team, and that talent showed because they really never fully clicked, it seemed like, the whole year. You know, we started talking about them later in the year as being more of a real threat than they'd ever been because they started to finally win some games. But, I mean, overall, you probably wanted to have a better result, you know, looking back at the preseason picks or whatever their odds are. But, I guess tournament-wise, that's exactly where they fell. And I guess okay season for Texas, looking back at it. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, it's interesting. I want to bring up a point for you. We can discuss it. But I agree with what you said. Like, they They're a dangerous team just because they're super talented. And especially this year's team, like Ace Smith is a guy who has tons of March experience. And I thought, you know, that would might give him a chance against Tennessee. And I thought they handled Colorado State really well, who was coming off a really just dominant win over Virginia. And they shut him down. And I think that was, and they were able to, you know, the offense didn't look great, but they, it was kind of an ugly game, but they were able to kind of get there eventually. But my question for you is, what do you do with Rodney Terry? Because he's now taken this team to, we can say like what, 1.5 NCAA tournaments. It was, I mean, a lot of these guys are Beard's players still, but what do you, I mean, we know he can recruit. I think there are some Texas fans that aren't so sure about him, but yeah. I wonder how you can, I mean, what do you do with him? Because now you've made it to the tournament twice. You've advanced both times, at least past the first round. Obviously last year they advanced a lot farther, but I'm just curious what you think like should be done, because I know Texas fans that don't love Rodney Terry and they expect to be better, but a 7 seed and then getting, you know, really close, 4 points away from the Sweet 16, it's tough to say like, all right, let's move on. What do you think about that?
No, for sure. And I've been critical of Terry. Like I've said, I haven't loved him and stuff like that. And I still don't, you know, love him, and he probably should have done more with the talent on this team. But as you said, like, I completely agree. I don't think there's any debate. You have to ride with him, at least for right now. Like you know, whether that was him or not, he was the coach of the team that went to the Elite Eight last year. And now they're, as you said, they almost made a Sweet 16, and getting another NCAA tournament win is massive for him in his first year. So you ride with him, and he's a recruit. They got that point guard coming in next year. That's pretty top of the line. I think top 5 recruit in the whole nation. So, you know, you give him, I think he has a little bit of a decent leash right now, I would say, because he's has been successful enough in the first couple of years that when you really, unless some other crazy option comes up, then that, you know, you could get, I would say you have to keep riding with him as of right now.
Yeah. They're bringing in the 10th best class in the country with, I think you're talking about Trey Johnson, that he's a sixth guy according to 247. And I guess when you bring in the 10th overall class, there's no way you can think about moving on. And I, for the record, I don't think they should. It's just interesting because there are some fans who don't love what, I mean, the ceiling with Rodney Terry, I don't know what it is. And I think there are some fans who feel the same way. They don't really know what the ceiling is, but the way he's recruited and the way that he's won games when it mattered, I think buys him time for sure. And I thought it was just interesting because they're, you know, I guess he's a polarizing coach even amongst that fan base. So,
yeah. And their brand's also so big that, like, you know, if obviously crazy situations happen, like there's all the discourse about Cal and Kentucky. Like, if you know you can get a guy that's better than him, then I would say do it. But as of right now, I don't think there's a guy out there that, that's worth switching the culture all around and forming such a new roster around, because Terry's done a fine job so far.
Yeah, it's probably more of a conversation if they lose to Colorado State, I guess.
Yeah, for sure.
But since they won that game, they probably, you know, he's safe. But I agree. I think there's some interesting coaching stuff that, you know, if they did move in a different direction, there's, I don't even know what they would do. So I think that he's got a, you know, he's earned it for now. And hopefully with this class coming in, they take that step up. We'll see. It's something to watch throughout next season.
Yeah. I mean, outside of like, I don't know, 5 or 10 programs, I think everybody should be like, you never know what your coaching situation is going to look like, because there's, I mean, it just gets crazier and crazier every year when guys jump when you don't think they're going to jump, and just different situations happen.
Yep.
But, the next team here, Kansas, which is super interesting. We talked about them so much. God. I mean, that Stanford game was one of the best games of the weekend. Stanford gave them all they had. They were just hailing threes. They had 16 made threes. And Kansas didn't even play that bad, to be honest. Like, Dickinson gave a good game. KJ gave a good game. You had Timby step up. Furphy stepped, like, their guys stepped up, and
yep.
you know, they were very, very controversial call, which, you know, it was a clean block, it was a bad call, but you never know what Sanford would have done the next possession. But I mean, yeah, they got kind of bailed out in that one, and then they just got handled by Gonzaga for the better part of that second half. And the funny thing that I took away was Self in the postgame presser saying that he was focused on next season already, which is super interesting because this team was so unique that everybody knows at this point they were so thin and they lost McCullough, and it was just kind of over once they lost McCullough. Like, no one thought they were a real threat, and that proved to be right. And he just like, yeah, like, I knew we weren't going to get this one, focus on next year. And they do have a lot of returning pieces, assuming most guys stay, that they could be, you know, back to being at the top next year. But yeah. I don't know. What do you think about that quote? Do you like when Self is like that open about it? And obviously, like, I think we both agree that when they lose McCullough, losing in the round of 32 isn't the biggest deal to a good, healthy Gonzaga team. But yeah, looking at the overarching impact of that quote, what do you think it means?
I think it's certainly a weird quote because, I mean, I think I know a lot of Kansas fans. I was actually with a Kansas fan that is a listener of this podcast when they lost Gonzaga. And I mean, a lot of their fans are like, this is the worst. Like, I mean, what is going on? And it's like they're a four seed. They're, you know, round of 32. Obviously, they don't have their best guy, but this is like a great season for basically, well, like 90% of college basketball. Like, yeah. I mean, so it's weird, but, and it seems like even Self was thinking like that. So it's weird. It's a weird quote to me. And I think he's probably earned the right to say, be honest and say stuff like that.
Yeah.
Because of how good he is, but I don't know. I don't know how that makes, I mean, obviously the season's over, so what does it matter now? But it makes things awkward for guys who might come back, or I don't know, like, definitely a weird quote, but I think that he's probably right. He probably knew when McCullough went down that they weren't going to do much, and getting to the round of 32 was a win for them. So, I guess it's a weird, I definitely thought it was really weird and not a great look, but maybe he's right to do stuff like that.
No, I don't hate it, to be honest with you, because as you said, like, they put themselves in that position where they're one of the best programs in all of college basketball, obviously, where, and especially Self being, you know, a top three coach, I don't know, in college basketball at this point, that he can be as open as what he wants. And when he's that transparent, I think maybe people kind of trust him more. I don't know. Maybe it's too transparent, but I like that he said that, knowing, because everybody knew that this Kansas team wasn't a great Kansas team, especially minus McCullough. And even that they were preseason ranked number one, it's crazy. But
no.
Also thing that was like, Hunter Dickinson, assuming like he can come back next year. So
yeah.
Like, it's a funny dynamic because wherever Dickinson goes, he hasn't been like crazy successful. It's one of those things where he's such an amazing player himself, yes, but does he hurt like what Kansas is trying to do as a team? I don't know. It's an interesting conversation to have that I heard some other people having, where Dickinson, does he hurt or help Kansas as a whole overall? Mm. Because it'll be an interesting thing to look at, especially going forward.
Yeah, I've seen some stuff like that too. Like, a bunch of Kansas Twitter people are saying they don't want KJ Adams, Hunter Dickinson.
Yeah.
Front court, exactly. Anymore, which is weird to me because both those guys are really good, but
their best teams have been guard bait. Like, you look at Mario Chalmers, Frank Mason, Devontae Graham, like, even Ojai Baji in the Natty year, like
Remy Martin a couple years ago.
Yeah, Remy Martin, exactly. Your guys, you know, guard play wins in March, and when you have your centerpiece being a big that isn't great on defense, especially, like, I don't know how, like, he's obviously one of the best offensive players in the country and one of the best players in the country, period. But it's a funny dynamic to have looking forward.
Yeah, it'll be interesting because I think the idea is that DeJuan Harris Jr. comes back, I think, and I think you might get Dickinson back, and then the rest, it sounds like, may or may not be there, and it doesn't seem like Kansas fans care all that much about any of
it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's weird. It's definitely weird, because I mean, I'd love KJ Adams on, you know, a team that I would, you know, I like him. So I think it's weird that there are some Kansas fans that are already finished with him. But maybe they do need a big shakeup. And if they're going to go in the direction of Dickinson, which, I mean, he's not an NBA guy, so he probably comes back. Although I think, I don't know. There was a quote, like, they're preparing you for him not, I don't know. But I think if you go in the direction of Dickinson, you have to prioritize some point guards. They didn't really, I mean, they had Dewan, who's good. And I think they just need more scoring in the backcourt. Yeah. And they probably expected something from El Marco Jackson, who's just a hilarious player to watch. But I don't know. It'll be interesting to watch how Bill Self kind of rebuilds this team, because by that program standards, it wasn't a great year.
Yeah, no, it's going to be super interesting offseason how they approach building their roster going forward. Because, like El Marco flopped, Timberlake flopped for the most part, and guys that you thought you would rely on more just didn't end up working out. And I think even Dewan, to his standards, had an underwhelming year. So,
not great.
Yeah, I'm super interested to see what Self does going forward, like how he attacks the portal and how he values recruits going forward. Because in this era of college basketball, I think it's less about having the one and done guys and more about attacking the portal and getting guys that fit your offense. So I'm super interested to see what they're going to do.
Yeah. Real quick on this, on the Samford Kansas game, I'm curious your thoughts on this. Cause as I was watching the games this past weekend, it felt like there are a lot of stoppages and timeouts and commercials, all that stuff. But with stuff like that Samford block, which was an amazing play and should have given Samford an opportunity to go win the game, how do you feel about adding like a last 2 minute of the halves, like a review where you get an opportunity to correct something like that, that is so egregious? It would probably slow the game down a little bit, but I think that's almost worth it when a play that of that magnitude happens and it, I mean, it basically doesn't count. Right. So what do you
think? No, I completely agree. And I think in that sense too, of speeding up the game and not having as many stoppages, there's already so many stoppages.
Yeah,
like reviewing out of bounds call, it's interesting what you can review and what can is a super interesting thing to me, because it seems like there's specific, like reviewing a flagrant that wasn't actually called on the floor, and then or like reviewing out of bounds, obviously you can do, but fouls you can't. And then like it just, because like TCU benefited off of the funny rule against in Emmanuel Miller Georgetown, where he was obviously out of bounds, but the rule is that if they didn't call it on the floor, you can't review it. So
yeah,
I would like to be able to review more things and just kind of common sense stuff, like when it's obvious up there, or maybe like coaches have a challenge like they do in the NBA, then you could use it that way, which would be probably the most beneficial. So then there wouldn't be as many stoppages. But if there's a crucial one like that, like the Samford coach could, try to overrule it, and it would have been an obvious overrule because it was all ball. So yeah, I'm all for that. And especially for those Samford fans, like that's their moment, and it killed the opportunity for them.
Yeah, for sure. I agree.
All right. You want to move to some Baylor talk?
Yeah.
Baylor talk's interesting because outside of the Natty, they've gotten out in the round of 32 a lot recently. Mm-hmm. So looking at the over aspect of, or the overarching thoughts of Baylor is funny, because they obviously had a good year, but their defense was always the backbone of them, and their 3-point was the backbone. They took care of Colgate round one, so we don't really have to get into like, you know, a 3-14 matchup. Mm-hmm. But in that Clemson game specifically, nobody really thought Clemson was going to have success. Like I picked New Mexico to the Sweet 16. I was on that stupid train.
What the hell was that?
Trusting the Mountain West.
That was the worst.
They fooled me. But no, Baylor's funny because Jacoby Walter missed the free throws down late, and they should have beat this Clemson. I know Eve Meese had a bad back and Langton Love was out, which are two key pieces for them, but They're kind of like a mini Kansas when if you lose a couple of guys, they're so thin that you really can't trust many people. And that's shown in this game. And when the threes weren't falling for him, like Ray J had an awesome game, but he was still 2 of 10 from three, and Jaden Dunn was 0 of 3. Guys weren't doing it, and then Clemson just randomly decided they were gonna go back to being that team that they were at the start of the year. And yeah, another round of 32 loss, so a disappointing end to Baylor, I would say. And it's interesting because whether you count the COVID natty or not, like it begs a question as to whether this brand of Baylor basketball that's not as reliant on defense can succeed long term.
Yeah, I'm looking at KenPom right now, and starting in 2020, here are their defensive efficiency rankings. They rank fourth in 2020. They ranked 22nd in the country in 2021, which is the year that they is that the year they ended up winning?
Yeah, that COVID against Gonzaga.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's right. Yep, Gonzaga. Yeah, so 22 there. In 2022, they had the 13th best defense. In 2023, the 107th best defense. In 2024, the 69th best defense. So the defensive numbers have continued to get worse and go down. And I think that the brand that Scott Drew built at Baylor, I remember it being this defensive. I mean, they could defend, and these teams could not defend. The last two seasons, Baylor has not defended well at all. And I think that almost has to be a priority for them and Scott Drew when they, assess the transfer portal and the recruiting stuff. I think they've got to get back to the defense, because they're going to get guys like Jacoby Walter in there who can score, and Ray J. Dennis and stuff. But you have to have guys who can defend, and they just did, as a team, they were not good defensively, and it certainly ended up hurting them in that Clemson game, I think.
Yeah, I think the obvious correlation with that too is losing Tang, because Tang is the defensive guy that
Yeah, that's
ever
true.
since they lost him, it's been what Baylor prided themselves on was defense, like with those Davion Mitchell, Jim Butler, like those teams were so defensive based, and they lost Tang and they just kind of kept falling off on that, and it becomes such a different style of team. So it'll be interesting to see how Scott Drew manufactures his roster going forward, because it's been just a lot of offensive guards that are so mega talented that's had success to a standpoint. But if you want to make a deep run on Mars, maybe you have to be more matchup proof, where you have to have some reliance on your defense to be able to have more consistent play. I don't know. It'll be interesting.
I think so. I mean, I think you have to, at least in some degree. And speaking of that, it's a good transition into the two teams who are still
Yeah.
advancing, both of which play almost, unfair defense, Iowa State and Houston. We'll start with Iowa State if you want.
Yeah.
They beat South Dakota State and Washington State. What did you think about Otzelberger's group?
Yeah, they just took care of business, I would say. Like, they were expected to beat them pretty decently. They were able to play their style too. Holding teams at 65 and 56, like they even got down to the wazoo at the start of the game, and then just found their footing and were able to play at the pace they wanted to. So, those games for Iowa State were the ones I really didn't worry about going forward, because I feel like when you're based on defense, you can beat up on the bad teams pretty easily. I am stoked to see that Illinois game, because Illinois is like the opposite of Iowa State. They have the best offense in the nation on KenPom, and Iowa State is the best defense in the nation. And Terrence Shannon and Domask and all their boys like Coleman Hawkins, they're all playing at such an elite level right now. Like, seeing the Lip against Shannon matchup and Keyshawn against Domask, like whatever style is played there is so gonna be so interesting, because it's the battle of just head to head their strengths. So I'm stoked for that game, and if they can get past Illinois, like I don't know if they can beat UConn, because UConn just seems like they're on a path right now that they just can't be
Destiny.
stopped. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, that'll be tough. But yeah, I'm just stoked for the games going forward, because I think it's a different style of team that they haven't seen before.
I think it'll be a really good game. Illinois has a terrible defense. They can't defend. So maybe the guys like Lipsy go on offense, and obviously that helps on the other end. But yeah, I agree with you. They really, there was no real stress for them, which is nice. They just kind of took care of business. And yeah, I mean, we already knew this. Everybody who listens to this pod already knew it too. Like they're legit. And
yeah,
I think that they're, yeah, I think I'm really excited for that Illinois game for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And then the last team that made the Sweet 16 is obviously Houston. And yeah, they beat up on Longwood, but the game, one of the best games of the week was, I think, the last game Sunday night against A&M, where that was electric. I mean, they had everybody in foul trouble, and they, like, Jamal Shedden was such a good leader. Like, he had the hop step, he had so many good moments, he's so smooth. But that collapse against A&M, once they started pressuring at the end of the game, like, Cry ran out of bounds, you know, they were missing some free throws, obviously guys were in foul trouble, so, like, you had, like, guys like Ryan Elvin had to shoot free throws, you know, Mars legend. But yeah, Houston dodged a bullet, because if Wade Taylor hit a couple more of those shots, like, if he was 4 of 26 in the game, which is unbelievable. Like, his shot selection down the stretch is bad. Like, he was shooting some D3s earlier in the shot like that he didn't need to do. So, if I'm being completely honest, I worry about Houston a little bit. And I've been so high on Houston, but I just don't think they're that crazy matchup-proof. And I think Duke is playing at their best basketball of the season. So that is probably the game I'm looking forward to most this next weekend, because I'm interested to see how Houston is able to shut down Duke, because Duke can have, like, Jared McCain's going crazy right now. Filipowski's always insane. You know, they have Proctor. Like, they have so many different weapons that I don't know how, like, is Shed going to match up against McCain or Roach or all these different kind of guys? Like, I don't know if Houston's as matchup-proof as other teams as they would like to be, because they show that when you sped them up, they almost gave up, you know, that huge collapse at the end of the A&M game. So I'm kind of worried about them long-term as being a natty contender, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they ran into a team that can score, and yeah, you mentioned Radford and Wade Taylor, all them gave them a lot of trouble, but I think that ultimately the way they won with the guys in foul trouble and you know, it was a tough win. And I think that that will probably go a long way. Just getting out of there alive, I think, is a big deal. I mean, shoot, do they have five? Yeah, they had 1, 2, 3, 4 guys with 5 fouls in that game.
Yeah, like, everybody was fouled out at the end. If that went to a double OT or double OT, they'd be sitting at home right now. So
yeah,
it's an interesting thing, because in March, you just got to survive in advance, so they could, you know, bounce back with a run. But I'm interested to see how they're going to respond for sure.
Yeah, that's kind of the way they play is really physical. So they can get into some foul trouble, I think. And we saw it there, almost hurt them. But what a game for, like, Emmanuel Sharpe was outstanding. I guess that kind of big three, I guess, of Sharpe, Cryer, Shed was all really great. But yeah, I think I agree with you. Like, there are definitely going to be some teams that can exploit what Houston does. Like, we saw A&M do it. And yeah, that Duke game will be really interesting, because Duke can score from all over the place. So they're going to have to, I don't know, they're going to have to figure that out for sure.
No, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And the other news that Big 12 wise, like, what coaching vacancies, I would say. West Virginia got their guy. They got Darian DeVries.
Yep.
And I think Drake, it's a good hire. Yeah, because, you know, he's had success at Drake, and, you know, they haven't had crazy success in the tournament, but actually making there. You know, they were 10 seed this year, almost beat Wazoo. And the big thing for DeVries is that he's bringing over his son, Tucker, who's one of the best players in the nation. And, or assumingly he's bringing him over. But that they're going to be an interesting team, because they had talent, like we said, this year. And when you finally have a good coach, like, Eiler just obviously wasn't the guys it proved on. But if you get a coach in there, like, Westfog could be kind of scary next year. So
yeah.
I like this hire for sure. And I think West Virginia basketball will be back. And and definitely a threat.
Yeah.
Next year.
DeVries was at Drake for 6 years and made it to the tournament three times. So
yeah,
Drake, that's pretty good. And I agree with you. I like the hire for West Virginia for sure.
Yeah. And the other vacancy that still hasn't been filled yet, which is a super interesting thing to look at, is Oklahoma State. Obviously they fired Mike Boynton, but they just been looking, and I don't think they have.
They kind of missed on all those like mid-major guys that usually get
mentions,
you know. So
exactly,
interesting.
I think they're looking at like Nico Medved right now. They're looking at like God. I mean, they were looking at Sprinkle. Sprinkle got taken, as you said, but I think a lot of Oklahoma State fans are upset with their AD and not, you know, going full force in this. And it's interesting to see, because there's a lot of jobs open right now where the basketball coach is the main guy at the university. But, you know, when you look at Gundy, they're like, that's their guy. So you wonder, like, if overshadowing is a factor, if that program just isn't where it was, you know, many years ago, why they haven't found the coach yet. But it'll probably be coming in the next couple of days, I would say. So I'm interested to see what they're going to look for and what guy they're going to have.
Yeah. We're almost out of time on the Zoom, so we can take a break and we can touch on some coaching stuff at the top if you want, and get into some kind of conference-wide transfer portal stuff. And then we'll also obviously kind of dissect the TCU stuff. But hang around. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Let's do it.
All right. Welcome back. We are going to finish up what we were discussing a minute ago, the coaching, some of the coaching Oklahoma State stuff. We'll start with that and then get into some transfer portal / TCU talk. But first, yeah, let's finish up with Oklahoma State, because it seems like they should have done something by now and they have not done anything.
Yeah. And when you're looking at the people left in the picture, I would say they wanted Sprinkle. They didn't get Sprinkle. Like, Will Wade still out there. Nico Medved, as I said before, Bryce Drew at GCU is a good candidate. But like, if I had a guess at this point, I don't know. It's so tough, because it looked like there's a lot of people in line for the job that just didn't get it. And it's a worrisome for what Oklahoma State's trying to build as a program. Because, you know, when they aren't as proactive, it doesn't seem like their plan fell into place, I would say. And you kind of worry for what their team's going to look like next season. And we'll get into a portal too, but a lot of their big time guys already hit the portal. So they're going to have to nail the hire here. I think Bryce Drew at GCU, I mean, he's done a great job building them up for the WAC. I mean, they were nothing to having such a big fan base and getting guys like Grant Foster and recruiting talent like that. And obviously, Medved's had success at Colorado State for years. You know, he just recruited Isaiah Stevens, and he's been he had Roddy a couple of years ago. Just he's had multiple studs in tournament runs. So there's still a couple guys out there, but at the end of the day, it's.
Sorry, I've seen Steve Alford on there too, Nevada.
Yeah, Alford's on there too. Yeah, just a lot of these mid-major teams that have had decent success going on. So they could still have a good one, but it's interesting to figure out what they're going to do and what their plan is for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, pretty much everyone else. I mean, not everyone else, but a lot of these teams acted pretty quickly and got their guy. So, I mean, I think it's certainly a little weird. I think if I was an Oklahoma State fan, especially because, you know, you miss the tournament, you should be preparing for this, right? And
yeah,
I mean, I don't really know what they're waiting on. I would assume it's going to be one of those three guys that you mentioned. But I'm sure it'll come in the next couple of days, because it has to, but yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. It's interesting as well too, because their program really hasn't had success at all in the past. I don't know. Like when Boynton was there since 2018, they only made one NCAA tournament, and that was the COVID year with Cade. So unless they had the top recruit in the country, they haven't had success from an NCAA tournament standpoint. And when you're in the Big 12, you definitely want to exceed those expectations. So building a program there is going to be difficult. To bring it back to what it was like GIA used to be packed and all that kind of thing. So I'm interested to see what they're going to do. And they're definitely one of those teams that's at the bottom right now that needs to take a few steps to get back to that upper echelon.
Yeah, I agree. I think we should, let's just get into TCU now, and we'll kind of do all transfer portal stuff in a little bit, because obviously we won't spoil it, but there's a TCU transfer story. So if you want to do just TCU tournament stuff and then get into the transfer portal as a whole, we could do that.
Let's run it. Yeah. Let's bite the bullet.
All right. Enough that we can run from it no longer. TCU, Utah State. Utah State wins 88-72. Not a great game to watch as a fan of TCU. A less than stellar way for a lot of these seniors and, you know, experienced guys who've been here for a while to go out.
Yeah, no. I mean, point blank, it was bad. Like, it was a what we've seen with this TCU team all the year. They started off the game hot when they got stops and got on transition, and that's been really, to look back at the season, the only consistent way they've been able to get offense. And the Utah State switched that 1-3-1 zone, and they just could not figure it out. Like, these simple zone offenses just messed with what TCU's been trying to do all year, and they just couldn't overcome it. The guard play has been bad. Like, Trey has lost all confidence towards the end of the year. He didn't show up. You know, like, Jacoby at 19 and Eman started off the game hot with 13, but outside of that, there was no consistent offense. They just could. And that's been the strong point. Like, offense has been what they've really relied on all year. And when teams switch to a zone that they can't figure out in the half court, then they're going to have struggle because their defense has not been consistent enough. And when you have a big, great big like Osabor and other guys like Martinez and, you know, guys stepping up for them that they didn't expect, like Isaac Johnson too as well, like these guys that you know, when you have a great big, TCU struggled against them, and other guys stepped up for Utah State. And I don't even think it was a Utah State thing being that great, because we saw them against Purdue the next round just get blown out, and TCU was favored in this game. So, yeah, not a great outing, but yeah, seeing the end of like this era of TCU basketball it kind of is like saddening, because you wanted to see them go out on a higher note. Like, it was the first time they had three straight NCAA tournaments, and to see Eman go out like that, and you know, Michael, we'll get to a little later, but and then, you know, your Jacoby's, your Chucks, you had all these guys that have been together for, and brought Xavier Cork, even like all these big seniors that have had it, and to go out like that sucks. So there's definitely going to have to be a lot of changes made to be able to fix this.
Yeah, it was really bad. Like, I think one thing is, we know they're going to have to figure out something on offense. The fast break, you know, up and down style of play is awesome. It's really fun to watch, and a lot of the times it works. It kind of throws, you know, your opponent off. But when you rely on it like TCU did this year, teams can sit back in a 1-3-1, 2-3 zone, and TCU doesn't know how to operate in the half court in really any sense. It just was ridiculous. It was the, you know, the Baylor 2-3 a couple weeks ago that completely, I mean, it made TCU look silly. And then this 1-3-1, I guess, that Utah State was running, which I've seen 2-3s, like, you have obviously the Syracuse 2-3 in the tournament that was super famous and successful, that actually TCU struggled with years ago. But a 1-3-1 in the March Madness, if that's what it is, which I think it was, is not something you see every day, and something that you should be able to figure out. I think they were just a bit too reliant on that, you know, their fast break offense, and it left almost no room for error in the half court.
Yeah, I think too, like, especially guard play in March, as we've said, and the guards were just bad, like, straight up. They, you know, looking at the overarching of the year, like, the guards were the problem. Like, Jameer was was probably the only good one consistently. And when you lose a Mike Miles and a Damian Ba, it's so tough to get past that, because when you're stuck in the half court, you need a guy that can be able to create his own shot, score from all levels. DB did that probably better than all these guards to a standpoint, and Mike was obviously one of the best players in the nation and doing that especially. So you miss those guys that can create, and they're going to have to find that guy, because Eman was the guy, but he wasn't as much of that guard type threat that can create for his own, or that overarching big presence that can dominate in the post. So it'll be interesting to see how they reconstruct their roster, because they're losing a ton of guys. Like, they had 10 seniors. I think five of them are completely out of eligibility, and then you don't know, like, we'll get in transfers later, but with stuff like that. So they're going to have to hit the portal. And I just want to say this too, because there's a lot of like frustration with everything. And I think there can be like a medium where like you realize what Dixon has done with the program, and he's taken it to new levels that he should not even be considered close to be getting rid of, in my opinion, because of what he's brought TCU from nothing to this. But it can also be said that you would like to expect better of like in-game adjustments and being able to defeat a zone defense and being able to create sets to get more open shots consistently, like knowing your talent level. And it's interesting to see, because you've seen guys like your in recent years, like your Jaden Ledee, your Shahada Wells, your Eddie Lampkins, your PJ Haggerty's, like Fran Farabella is playing big minutes for Creighton. A lot of these guys who have left TCU's program has had more success, if not similar success, to what we had. So developing talent and putting them in better situations to succeed based on their skill set could be benefited on. But Dixon, I mean, this is still, I think, a successful year. They probably met expectations, I would say, post Mike Miles DB era, because you lose Mike, DB, Eddie, Hada, so many guys, and to revamp your whole roster with a ton of transfers that didn't really know how to play together, it seemed like, for the majority of the year. I think it's still, you know, getting a 9 seed is still a success, and I don't think it's anything to like panic about as a TCU fan in terms of looking at the broad point of where they are as a program and stuff. So I just want to say that, based on like the Dixon, you know, frustration, at least from my point of view.
Yeah, it's funny to think about like all former TCU tournament team. It would be like, I think you could fill out a team almost, right? Because you'd have like, probably Fran Farabello at the one, maybe Wells at the two.
Yeah, I had a tweet about this. Years ago, or not years ago, months ago. God, let me see if I can pull it up. See
you what got the transfer team had. You got like Ledee at the four and Lampkin at the five, and then I don't know what you. Maybe I'm missing someone with the three.
Yeah. No, I got it right here.
A bad team.
So, starter PJ Haggerty. He dropped 20 a game at Tulsa this year and the AAC Freshman of the Year. Fran, you know, you got that shooter. You got Hada, who's Southland Player of the Year at McNeese. Ledee is one of those players in the country. Eddie, who just took over the world at, you know, just his charisma. And, you know, he's actually like a great, like a really good player, both defensive and offensively. Yeah. Easley, Taren Frank, Suleiman Doumbia, Deontay Smith off the bench. You got dudes that could fill up a team. So it's interesting to see like why these guys didn't work out essentially TCU and what that is. But
especially because like this team could have used a guy like, you know, Haggerty. You know, who knows? I mean, he's playing at Tulsa. Right. So it's not Big 12. But I mean, he was great. He was awesome. And like Hade Wells was great. I still think Fran Farabello is a super smart player that rarely makes the wrong play. I think you could probably use that in your point guard room this year. So, and then obviously like Ledee, to be fair, watching him at TCU, you would have never thought that he was going to go be the best player
in
the country or whatever. But it is pretty crazy to look at all these guys that TCU has lost that are now excelling. But to your point on Jamie Dixon, I'll just say this. I'll keep it short because you did a good job. But if you're one of the people who's adamant that Dixon needs to be gone, it's very clear that you were not a TCU basketball fan until about 3 years ago. Like, I mean, there, if you remember what TCU basketball was a decade ago, if you were there, you know, if you have any memories of that, like, it's terrible. There's nothing. There was nothing there. And Dixon has come in now and has made it an expectation and like a, you know, a baseline goal of making the tournament. Like, if you're making the tournament 3 years in a row, a TCU fan 15 years ago would have lost his mind, you know? Like, it's crazy. We just need to put things in perspective here. TCU's new to this basketball. Like, they haven't taken basketball seriously historically. Yeah. And now they are, right? They have what I consider to be like a top, what do you think, like 25 coach in the country? I think he's a good coach.
Yeah, no, I'd say for sure. Especially
he's got
with
the 16th best class in the whole country coming in, the best class in TCU history. I just think you're absolutely crazy and probably a little bit out of touch of what TCU was if you're ready for Dixon to go. Because,
yeah,
I mean, he's done a better job than anyone else has at TCU. So, I don't know. It's crazy to me.
No, I think for sure. And with this Louisville job hanging around too, like, you see his name being thrown out there a little bit for that, which is a little worrisome because, mm-hmm. like, who would TCU replace him with that would be anywhere near what the success he's brought, especially being an alma mater and, like, having that extra for TCU. So it's, yeah, it would be horrible for the program if Dixon left. And I'm very interested to see, especially with this class, like, if we look at what's next for TCU, like, you have the class coming in, you have a kind of a new wave, it seems like. Mm-hmm. Like, the guys who have, so we had 10 seniors, and the guys who are done with the eligibility, Avery Anderson, done. Xavier Cork, done. Eman, Chuck, Trey, Jameer, they're all gone. Like, no eligibility left. Micah Peavy just hit the portal, which we can get into a little bit, especially, but, and then you don't know what's going to happen with Jacoby Coles. The only guy you really see coming back for sure is Ernest Duda. And then you have Jace Posey, Isaiah Manning, a redshirt freshman, and four new freshmen. So it's going to be a complete new young team that I think can kind of form the next era that, you know, your Mike Miles, your DBs, your Eddies, your Emans, your Chucks, the guys who have been there, that next kind of wave of a core. So next year could be interesting in terms of not being maybe as competitive, but not panicking as much. Obviously, Jamie's going to raid the portal, and which he's done tremendously to this point to building some of these teams, but to make it at least decently competitive. But I think you could see a little bit more young guys playing than you have seen in the past, because the last two freshman period to really play for Jamie was Mike Miles.
Mike.
A couple of years ago. Yeah. Or I guess 4 years ago now or something like that. But so you have to be stressed with, but I think you can see it a little bit, especially with this class, like you said, the best class you've seen. Like, I think you can see, you know, friend of the pod, Michael Robinson, playing a little bit, and obviously Jason, sure. Isaiah, like, your David Punch is a super big commit. You know, you had some other guys too, but I'm interested to see what we're going to do in the portal. And if you want to get into, like, Micah specifically, how that impacts us, that was some news this morning that I didn't expect to see.
Yeah, I'll say this real fast. I think that this is probably the year I would say that you see him, Dixon, maybe be more aggressive than he's ever been in the portal because of just the youth and the inexperience he has coming back. Yeah. So I think it should be a pretty fun offseason just to watch what he does. But yeah, let's get into Micah, because just like, I mean, I woke up and maybe I didn't wake up, but I looked at my phone and I really couldn't. It was pretty surprising to me for sure. I thought that, you know, he was either, you know, leaving college basketball or coming back. I didn't really expect a portal, but what do you think about this?
Yeah. Micah is one of the best players of this team. And especially on the team the last couple of years, and what he's done to improve his offensive game, especially, like, he's, him going into the portal hurts TCU a lot. And I know he's testing the NBA draft waters too. And he's got the build where I think he, like, if he improves the offensive game a little more, like, he actually could have success. Mm-hmm. And I see what he's what his plan is with the portal, because as we just talked, based on what we just talked about, you know, you have all this youth guys and you have one more year as a graduate student to play basketball. You want to ensure you have the best, you know, the best chance to be competitive, which is and Micah is one of the best transfers. I think he was top seven transfers in the country right now. So he really can have his pick of the bunch of where he wants to go. You know what I mean? I feel like
absolutely
every program in the nation is going to want a defender like that, a guy who's as athletic, and if he continues to prove his offensive game, like a good offensive threat as well with that build. So, I get where he's coming from. It's obviously disappointing as a TCU fan to hear the news, but you understand that you like, what he's done for TCU. I mean, he's been one of the biggest parts of the pieces that we've had moving on, and he had, you know, great moments this year, like the ASU triple double, the Kansas State game where he just went crazy. So he's left his mark at TCU, and I think it's less like angry about it, more like understanding and like, oh yeah, you know, that's what he feels is the best decision for him at this point. So it'll be super interesting to see where he can go, because I think he could go to some big time schools that will be fun to see him succeed at.
Yeah, I mean, especially now, like the NIL stuff adds a whole other element to it. He might get better opportunities elsewhere. I don't know. Or, you know, I don't, and I'm not, you know, I have no clue, but there's always also a chance like he goes in and looks around and gets TCU to up and offer maybe a little bit. Who knows? But it's definitely a different kind of age of basketball now with the portal and the NIL. So there's all sorts of factors that could be in play. But yeah, the most obvious one to me is just like there are questions about what kind of team TCU is going to be next year. And, you know, he probably wants to go win. So
yeah.
I don't think there's any reason to be super pissed off with this guy. You know, he's coming here from Texas Tech, obviously. And, you know, at Texas Tech, he wasn't great. And he's, you know, the improvement that we've seen from him just in like 2 or 3 years has been really cool. So I think it's silly to be all angry with him. I get it, but, you know.
Yeah,
he gave TCU a ton and was a huge part of this 3 year run that we've seen. So, that's what I have to say.
No, with him leaving as well, like I'm interested to see, like, because I think Jacoby has one more year left to see what he'll do. You know, because there's so, as you said, there's so many different avenues you can go in with this thing. But with Micah leaving and having all the seniors gone, like, I'm. This portal season, as we touched on a little bit before, is going to be interesting. Like, TCU has already been linked to a couple guards because we basically need everything. I guess Uday's kind of the, you know, Uday's what I mean?
Kind of your big center and everything else to fill out.
Yeah, because I think you need guards who can handle the ball a lot better than we had. Like, Jameer's probably your best ball handler, but like, we need more guys who can handle because we were pressured a lot throughout the year. We need shooters, I would say. We need, you know, wings that can be able to play right now. Maybe some, because we have a lot of wings coming in with the young guys, you know, like your Jace, your Isaiah, your Micah, Punch, Ashton Simmons is kind of that 2-3, but those guys probably won't play right away. So guys that are maybe vets, college level, like seniors who, you know, when I play one last year, you know, playing the Big 12, get some guys that can do damage for you, because as wings at TCU and guards especially have had a lot of success the past couple of years, into being in that free-flowing offense. So guys that fit your offense, there's a couple guys like Corin Johnson. He's the guy at UW. We've already been linked to him a little bit, and I think he would fit us, just being able to play that fast pace and handle the ball and shoot from all levels. Also, a guy I was looking at today was Dante Maddox out of Toledo. He was the All MAC second team, and he led Toledo in scoring. They were first in the MAC in the regular season. So, guys like that, and we've seen transfers play big roles in what TCU's done. Like, so, Jamie's he brought in one of the best transfer classes last year, on paper, and I think he can continue to do that and sell what we're doing, because I think it could be a really fun offense for guys to be a part of in the Big 12 and be able to kind of like play a free flowing style that can fit their games. And I'm excited to see what we do, because I think the sky's the limit and you don't know what to expect out of this portal season.
Yeah, it's absolutely an attractive spot, in my opinion, you know, unbiasedly looking at it, because it's the Big 12. It's TCU, who, you know, now, thanks to Jamie Dixon, has been, you know, a level up from what they were. And, you know, these players and recruits and all that have seen that. So, yeah, I think it's, they are going to have a chance to, you know, kind of raid the portal, and it'll be pretty cool to see. One thing I think you talked about, you know, what they have, I think they need to prioritize like a true point guard. I think that's one thing that they missed this year. Like even Jamie kind of said in a presser, I can't remember which one, but he said, you know,
Jameer, three new guards.
Jameer and Avery were kind of the first scoring options at Oklahoma State, or at Oklahoma State and Delaware, where they were before, and he brought them in, and it was kind of this transition into becoming more of a point guard and not that first option, which I think was an adjustment for both those guys probably. And you know, as much as I like Jameer and Avery and all that, I think you should probably prioritize a guy who can set up your offense, a guy you can count on to, you know, not turn the ball over. I mean, those two guys had turnover problems all year.
Yeah, you want to step up for sure.
So you just, I think you just want like a true point guard who can, I don't know, who can, you know, make your offense, especially in the half court, a guy who can go out there and help you just, all around offensively.
You say that too, and I think of this year, like at Baylor, a guy like Ray J. Dennis, who's out of Toledo, who has played that role, so like that offense has fit perfectly for him, or he's been the guy to set up the offense and have shooters around him and be able to come off the pick and roll and stuff like that. And you know, I mentioned the guy at Toledo, like that's where Ray J. Dennis is from, out of Toledo. So you can find guys at smaller schools, like it doesn't, just guys that fit what you do is so important, because we play that unique style. And I don't know if like it necessarily fit Trey or Avery or even Jameer like as well as it could have, from a what we needed standpoint at the time. And it's obviously so difficult because you lose, like Mike and DB were such a great backcourt and they worked perfectly for what they're going to do, because they went fast and Mike could create on his own in the half court, which you need in this offense, because we've seen half court woes over and over again. So a guy that can create off the dribble is probably your number one priority, I would say. For getting that stud guy. And again, you mentioned like this is a destination that people should want to be a part of, especially when you want to take that next step, because you know, we're, you don't know what the season, so you could come in and be like the top option on this team next year, you know what I mean? If you want to be the guy in a Big 12 team that can hoop to what, like being able to take control of the ball, like this is a spot that's extremely in a unique situation right now. And what this team looks like next year, like you have no idea. And that's the exciting point right now. Like we could come on the pod next week and have, you know, three new transfers and another guy gone, or, you know, vice versa. And it's going to be a week to week thing that I think Frog fans will be more invested in more than ever in this offseason, because of what expectations are now and being able to meet them, that you're going to have to do damage in the portal.
I mean, it's the most unique off season I think Jamie Dixon probably has had, maybe. So I'm excited to see how he attacks it. He's already done a really good job with the freshman, right? Like he brought in a great class, but
I think of too the off season before the 22 season, the first of the three in a row.
Yeah, where we got it, Mike was, and E-Man.
It was just Mike who was coming back from it. Like, they yeah. lost Nembhard and those
yeah,
guys.
That's right. Yeah.
And you brought in Micah Peavy, Damian Baugh, Emmanuel Miller. Like, those were all three freshmen who yeah. had all three transfers who had a sick impact right away. So yeah. it can be done. And that team was insanely fun. And they had little expectations at the start, but they conquered him. So it's super interesting. And to know yep. that too, like it's not a unique spot for TCU because we've already seen guys go in the portal from so many different, like big time guys from so many different mm-hmm. Big 12 schools. Like to note, like Otega, oh wait, he's not in the Big 12 anymore. Like I guess we're tiring OU and Texas talk.
Oh yeah, no more OU.
So, but Texas. Yeah, but like Cam Carter for K-State, Garrison for Oklahoma State, him and Javon Small were two of their best players. Marcus mm-hmm. Adams for BYU, Dantuan Grimes for Baylor. Like dudes are hitting the portal now, and it's only going to get crazier this week. So yeah. I'm interested to see how the whole Big 12 shakes up, not just TCU, and how we kind of align with what's going on in the conference.
Yeah, absolutely. It'll be interesting for sure. And and we still have Houston and Iowa State to keep an eye on, which is fun. So balancing yeah. the last couple rounds of this tournament with transfer stuff, coaching stuff is going to be really fun. So I'm excited for
yeah. No, it'll be fun for sure.
Yeah. Well, what else do we have? We have anything else?
No, sure. I think we covered it all. Kind of did some cleanup from that, which is good. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I guess just saying to the list, like we'll be doing pods for at least till the rest of the NCAA tournament and maybe get some cool guests on. So
yeah,
definitely we'll do more off season stuff too in the next couple of weeks, and just stay tuned for the pods.
Yeah, TCU's out, but we aren't yet, so keep coming around.
Exactly. But no, it was a fun year overall. I guess looking back at it, like we had sick moments. E-Man Super Georgetown, cool. You know, that triple OT in Baylor, like Jameer game winner. Yeah, K-State, you know, I don't know. It was still a successful season, and obviously it left a bad taste in our mouth from not just the last game, but kind of like towards the end of the year when we kind of started to fade. But yeah, I mean, overall, still a success from TCU basketball standpoint, and from what we lost from the year before to bounce back, it was still a good job.
Yeah, I agree. It's a fun season. We had fun doing this. So we appreciate everyone who's kind of hung around with us, listened each week, and we'll be back. Obviously we'll keep going for a while, but next season is going to be fun as well. So we're excited.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, there you have it. My name's Davis Wilson. That's Nick Germani, as always. And we will see you next week.
Thank you, guys.